Hi. Okay, we're going to get started here. Shall I kick it off? Brian told me you're better at this than I am, so I'm going to do just a brief time and turn it over to you. Okay, quality of time versus quantity of time. This person writes a baby thesis, and I'm going to read the question. Sometimes I live under an evangelical guilt trip about the quality of time I spend with my children, 10 months and 3.5 years. We spend a lot of time together, I make sure that. We go to the playground, do the dishes, help mommy with the laundry. I take my daughter to the bank so she can get a lollipop. We go to Ranger games. Is this on the level? We go to Ranger games. Have you ever gone to a game with a 3-year-old? It'll totally change your perspective of Major League Baseball. We'll read The Grinch Who Stole Christmas. I like this guy. Stole Christmas. There's a sign at a church no extra charge for this, the L.A. area that a friend of mine saw and took a Polaroid picture of that says, such and such a church, come and hear the Bible preach the way it's wrote. Great sign. WROTE. Come and hear the way it's wrote. You want to hear it. Say, they read The Grinch Who Stole Christmas 100 times at one sitting, will become real deviants and change the rules of Candyland, then not play by them. Or sometimes we'll just lay in front of the TV and watch cartoons together. If he wrote this during my talk, he missed half my talk, is all I want to say. I'm sure many would think this is a waste of time. I don't. But I still am not sure what quality time is. Is there something mystical about it? What could I do to improve our time together? Help me. It's unbelievable. Any guy who does that much with his kids has nothing to worry about. I absolve you of all guilt. Honest to Pete, that is great. If you are the kind of person that'll spend that kind of time, forget quality and quantity, you're doing it. And I've also found that somebody that concerned who is asking about this doesn't have anything to be worried about. You're spending the time, and that's what your children love. As best you can, try to invest those moments with them. And you're doing it the right way, too. It sounds like it's on their level. You're having fun. I don't know about the Major League Baseball for a 3.5-year-old, but still you're doing it with them in mind. That's great. Mrs. Swindoll, give me an easy one. Is there an easy one down there? Oh, goodness.
There's too many here.
Right.
I'm trying to divide them up because I understand primarily we're to cover things related to couples with children. So I have one here. I lost it. Please give examples and comments on open communication in families and between children and parents. And there's another one, how do you differentiate between childish disobedience and rebellion, one worthy of minor discipline and the other capital discipline? I think I'll try to cover a number of things related to children with just some general comments about how we handled things of this nature in our home. I learned a principle from a friend of mine many, many years ago, and I'll always be grateful for it. He's a man, his name is Everett Lindstrom, and he set up a ministry first in the Dallas area. We knew him when he was just a teenager, and we were teenagers attending the same church, really before we got married. And he was a little bit younger, so he started this sort of a ministry here in Dallas, then carried it to Florida at the request of some officials in Florida who wanted to have a program for kids that were just one step out of jail. And he would take them on rafting trips. They'd have to build their own raft and work together. But he said the way that they worked through things, because these kids, many of them as teenage girls, they had already been in prostitution and just a number of real hardcore problems. They would sit and they would talk out things. And he said sometimes they would sit for 24 hours until they'd really talk things out. So I adapted this to raising our children. And from the time that they were very, very tiny, as soon as they could communicate or understand anything about communication, every time there was a tension or a problem, we would sit down and we would talk about it. I mean, every time. And when the, as siblings, you know, got a little bit older, if they even started an argument, we would sit down and we would discuss it. We had some game rules. We had to listen to what each other had to say. We were not to correct each other. We were to try to put ourselves into their shoes to understand how they felt. And I guess my only claim to fame, I would say, would be our children, because we've never had one of them rebel, even for a day. And I don't say that with a lot of pride, and I don't know why. And I'm not saying it'll never change. I hope it doesn't. But I think they had an opportunity where they were very, very respected to really say what was going on in their heads. And when it would come to what demands corporal punishment and what doesn't, I think an outgrowth of that is very evident. And you know whether they are being rebellious. You know whether, as just a real young child, they're pounding their head on the floor or doing whatever. You know when it's a rebellious act, and you know when it isn't. You're the best determiner of that. But I think through the process of their being able to communicate, a lot of things come to the surface. In fact, and I've already spoken with one wife here, so I know that there's an inability to do that on the part of some adults here. And I would really encourage you as mates to practice this with one another. And you're not finished until there's complete understanding on both sides of the fence. So I'd encourage you to really put that into practice with your kids.
You're tough.
I am tough, honey.
When you go at that, your lips quiver, I notice. You're really, that's great. When you were under a great deal of criticism by your congregation, how did your children handle it? Well, two left home, for one thing. I shouldn't joke about that. Actually, we have not sat down with all of our children and told them about all the heavy stuff we're living under all the time. As they've gotten older and they've sensed that some pressure is on, they will ask us. And we've told them. We've told them everything on occasion. But as they were younger, we didn't add to their world by giving them the whole truckload of pressure we were living with. I've always shared with Cynthia the criticism I'm receiving, and she has always shared that with me. But there have been few occasions that we've sat down and rehearsed the whole bad news with the whole family for supper. That's not what we've done with our children. How did you communicate what was going on or why Daddy was receiving such criticism? And that's a good second part of the question. When we did share it with them, we honestly tried to tell them how the other person was looking at it. And by the way, we didn't give them their names, usually. We didn't identify it as John and Mary Brown and watch out for them type thing. It was... Well, there's a couple in the church that has a little misunderstanding with Dad right now, and it's over such and such. And that seemed to satisfy. It didn't ever seem to be a big problem. Why don't you go to the next one?
Well, I want to just read one that relates to that. How do you maintain being real and authentic, and you feel like the only real people?
I got one like that that says, how did you create... Or how do you maintain such an open relationship with your children and each other? How does that affect your ministry with others, being so vulnerable?
I think we may have covered that with what I just said. I think when you're dealing on this gut level every day and several times a day if necessary when children are real small, and by the way, they soon learn to go to each other if they have something, because they don't want to sit down with mom and go over, you know, all of this information. But you stay real. You're openly having to admit, you know, I goofed. I made a decision too quickly when I said that you couldn't do that. We've always said, if it's at all possible, let's let them do what they want to do. If they want to, like Colleen, who will be with us tomorrow, she wanted to be a cheerleader. She needed to get her education. And if she could keep up with all the hundreds of things that she could come up with for kids to do, and she'd have to get in bed late, she had to go to school the next day, she had to keep up with things at home, and we did that with all of our kids. If they feel like they can do all of that, then let them do it. Then when you do have to say no, there's a whole lot more respect for it, and you're more real in the way you're communicating that to them.
Let me step in here and say, and I'm going to show a little prejudice, I guess, here. One of the reasons we love ministering in California is it seems to be more open than many areas that we've ministered, in which we've ministered. I'm not saying it's the only place that you can be effective. I'm certainly not saying everybody ought to wind up there. Seems like they do, but I'm not saying that that should be. But the openness of that area frees us to be that way. I'm that way naturally. Cynthia's more that way naturally. So that's one of the things that attracted us to the area. We fit like teeth in gears. It drew us in, and they want that, at least in the place where we minister. So rather than ever hurting us, I don't believe I can name a time that it hurt us. Maybe I've shared some things from the pulpit at times that I shouldn't have, and we talked about later. But usually the people have appreciated an open admission to struggle, to difficulty. I have wept before the congregation at times when I have been low, under the gun, struggling with something. I haven't always told them the whole story, but I have told them, that is why I'm down. I've even said, this is not the place I want to be today. Because that's the truth. And why should I fake it? And I've had more men address that than anything. They've said, at last we find a guy we can identify with. There are lots of times we don't want to be here. And to have you admit it has helped us. And so rather than hurting, it has helped. I think you have to be appropriate. I think you have to do that with wisdom. And you have to earn that. I didn't, my second Sunday in the pulpit at Fullerton, I wasn't telling them all the dirty things I've ever thought about all my life. But after a while, I don't think there are many things that I couldn't share with our congregation. They've learned that that's my style, and it has freed them up to be a lot like that. In fact, frankly, when I come to Dallas Seminary, I sense some hesitance in that area. There's some resistance in this scene here. It's a lot more formal. And I understand that's part of the academic scene, I guess, but that's not the real world. And I hope you don't carry that with you if that isn't your style. For some of you, it is, to be more formal. That's the way you are. That's being real. Then you've got to be that. But if it's not you, you have to put some of that on hold while you're in seminary, don't you, Bill? And then after a while, you come back out and be who you are. That's why we love Bill Bryan. He does crazy things, and that's his style. That's all I'm going to say.
These two relate to children. As parents of a six-month-old, my wife and I are concerned that we start off well in the discipline of our child. My question relates to how and how much we should place limitations on her. Should we child-proof our home, or should we even now expect her to understand no, or even as some suggest, slap her on the hand when she reaches for something which she shouldn't touch? We do not want to stifle her curiosity. Do you have any practical advice? And the other relates to what can we do now with our strong-willed son, age 6, to help us during the teen years ahead. I believe that you ought to at least have some areas of your home that are very child-proof, and everything in there, you know, they would be free to be curious about. I'd read a book, Teaching Montessori in the Home. I just loved it, and covers so many practical things and didactic materials that you can make yourself, or, you know, out of sandpaper, you know, letters. And I think homeschooled children and their parents have taught us a lot, too, about how we should set up our home so that it has an educational environment as well as one in which there's the least amount of discipline required. I think when a child really understands the rules, and you've been very clear about those, in other words, don't discipline a child for slamming the door if you've never taught them how to close it quietly. Just some very practical things like that. It reduces the amount of discipline that you have to do. But if you are continually feeling that you've got to discipline your child, you have a very frustrated child, and perhaps your demands are too high. I think you should think in terms of every single thing that they do being a teaching element. When they take a bath, they can have little things that they squeeze so that they develop their muscles, and you try to teach them to develop all of their senses through whatever play things they have around, and have respect for those toys. Don't just, you know, toss them in a box, but they need a place, and the child needs to know what that place is to be responsible for putting them there.
You know, as we got more and more children, the demands and perfection became less and less. When we had one, man, we were ironing shorts and matching pajama tops and bottoms. By the time you have four, you don't care what they wear to bed.
Just or where they bed. Sleep. You really don't care.
Right. It's far less important. I have a little saying that I pass around on occasion. Everybody owes one thing to their firstborn: an apology. All of us were too strong, too tough, too perfectionistic with our firstborn. And unfortunately, we aren't quite as good to go back and tell them that we're sorry, that we really were too demanding of them. I have a question. How did you use spankings with your children? What guidelines would you give for the use of that? Sincerely, I like the ending, sincerely, the father of a dear, joyful, but gets into everything, two-year-old. Isn't that great? Well, I wrote a book called You and Your Child, and in it I spell out our philosophy of spanking. And so I won't go into that. It's there for you if you'd like to get a hold of a copy. Let me say that one of the important principles in spankings is that they know what the rules are. And as young as you can possibly find them to understand why, please explain why. You and I were probably raised with "because I told you so," which is a dumb answer. It isn't a why. It's your will against mine, and I don't have a reason, and often it's I can't think of a reason. So I'm bigger than you are, so don't do it. We have seldom, I won't say never, we have seldom said to our children, "do it because I said so." Especially when they reach the teenage years, they need some reasoning. They need some wobble room. You did, and I did. I've never met anyone who wanted to be a teenager again. And that's the reason. Because when the will in the area of reason conflicted with that granite will of the parents in the area of reason, the parents often weren't flexible enough to give answers. They just stood firmer and shouted louder, which meant you ran faster. We determined not to do that. And thankfully, so far, we haven't had any bad repercussions. We have had some people in the church who've wondered at times why we don't hold it as strict a rule as they hold. For example, we haven't made all of our children always go to church all the time. Part of the reason is because we don't like to go all the time. And if we had our way, we wouldn't go as much. I think there are too many church services. You didn't ask about this, did you? But I'm getting into an area. And so we've been a little more realistic with our children. If they've had good reasons for not going, they didn't have to go. And we happen to live in an area, and we happen to live in a church where that's not scandalous. And we like the breathing room that provides. Sometimes far more important things happen outside a church service than in. And sometimes Cynthia's gotten the best time with the children when she's been there with them on a Sunday evening. This is especially worth thinking about as your children get older. Consequences are that sometime when they reach adulthood, they won't be as deeply committed to the church itself. Hopefully they will still be as committed to Christ. There is a difference. Hope I'm not creating a problem by saying that. Okay.
I may be creating a problem. Since the seminary has graciously provided a marriage seminar for us this Friday and Saturday, do you think it would be appropriate for the faculty to drop part of our assignments for next week? I'm dying to answer this. So that we have time to attend. I think that's a fabulous idea. And let me tell you another idea that I got this morning, because you need some babysitters on Saturday. I think that you ought to make that a special course for singles and give them credit toward graduation, because believe me, they're going to learn a lot that day.
You're crazy, honey. Here's one that said, did you find it difficult to support your children spiritually, physically, and emotionally with all the other pressures of the ministry? No. Uh-uh. Never once did the pressures of the ministry make it difficult for us to support our children spiritually, physically, or emotionally. Never.
How do you both balance work and ministry and children?
Oh, I don't think we do. We don't always balance it.
We don't always balance it, that's true.
Right.
Trying to think of how to say this. I think we get into trouble when we try to prioritize things. Okay, a list that you often hear would be your marriage and family's first, the church is second. You know, you've heard that list. And I don't quite agree that we should have a list. I think that there are certain times when your priority would be your work, because you've got to put food on the table or what have you. And there are times when your family or one of your children or your mate will be a priority because of a particular need that they have that day. And it's during the course of that that you manipulate, I mean that in the right sense, your circumstances so that you can address that need. There may be times when both are equally strong priority needs. One will have to defer to the other.
That's when you have to talk.
That's when you have to talk.
Yeah, yeah, and that's when you have to talk with your kids. When you, especially as they get older, believe me, it gets easier as they get older, because mm-hmm. you can talk. You know, it's so hard when they're two, you know, and you can't get through to them. But when they're 12 and 13, and they got a ball game, and you got a weekend elder retreat that's been planned for 7-8 months, and your kid says, "But Dad, I'm playing soccer, and it's a semifinals." You say, "Son, you know, if I could give my right leg, I'd be there. But I got to tell you, if I'm not there, they're going to take my right leg. I got to be at that elders meeting." So I tell you what, if it's possible for me to leave a little early, I come for the last part of it. Or if I can't leave at all, I'll tell you what, I'm going to make that final. And I know you're going to be in the finals. And you pray like mad they win so that he gets in the finals. But we reason with them. We'll tell them we're in a jam. I got to pull this off, you know. This will happen at times, and you will wish to goodness that you didn't have that conflict. Sometime you can flex, and you can shift. Sometime you have to flex in favor of the other part rather than the one at home, and that has to be talked through.
My husband works 40 to 50 hours a week. He may leave on Sunday afternoon and not see our children until Saturday. I feel like a single parent. If he cuts back at school, he will be older than you when he is done. What advice can you give us, and will this time affect our children? Our children's ages are 10, 8, and 5. Would you say we sort of answered that with what we just discussed?
I didn't listen to the question, tell you the truth. I was reading another one, so you're on your own, Toots.
I feel this is an important time to communicate with the children just what's going on, especially if there is no way that the family's needs can be met with a reduction in the number of hours worked, and sometimes that is indeed the case. The thing that I would strive for is, and I'm going to mention this a little bit on Thursday night, so I don't want to give you all my thunder now, but wives need to be creative. If your husband has to work like this, and you do need to be supportive of him and assist him in whatever way you can, you need to be creative in the way you raise those children during this time. If you become bitter, if you become angry toward what's going on, that's going to be communicated to your children. It's going to be more damaging to them than if you just sit down and say, this is a period in our lives. It's not going to always be this way, but we're going to have to all work together so that we can help Daddy get through school. It's surprising how cooperative those kids will become in that endeavor. And they'll do special little things for their daddy so that it'll make these few brief hours that he has available very, very special.
She sounds so great in answering that, but I'm going to tell you the deal she did on me when I was writing my thesis. I was between my third and fourth year, I decided I'm going to get this thing done in the summer. And so I had a carrel over there which backed up to our apartment. We lived at campus apartments over there. Great place. Hot and cold running rats. Terrific spot. It was a marvelous place. They leveled it, I'm glad to say, and now they park on the spot. But we lived there, and I would sit in this carrel digging into this thesis and working on my material, and Cynthia would come out with Kurt, our only one at that time, and she'd let him play out there in the yard. Just let him play around, you know. And
now, I didn't do that till late in the afternoon.
Wait, I'm talking. Wait a minute. Let me tell you this. And so I'd be working there, and I'd look out there, and I'd see him, and she'd say, wave to Daddy. He'd go, yeah. Finally, I'd just give up on the thesis and run out there and play with him. I couldn't stay away. So there are times that you can kind of manipulate, you know, having him stick around. What are the three most significant pieces of advice you could give to young parents? Well, when you put it like that, that really makes us think. I'm sure one would be have a little more fun together. Life here is terribly serious. You know, you didn't pay this kind of money to come to this great school to, you know, sit in front of a stand-up comic. And so it's not going to be fun and games. It's not meant to be. A master's program that you're proud of or a doctorate that you're going to be proud to have is one you've worked hard for. And so you got to balance that out with a lot of fun at home. Have a little more fun together. Try not to take everything so intensely serious. That's good to carry with you into ministry. Because in the church, everything seems desperately serious, and it often is. So if there's one place you're going to have a little pocket of peace, make that little place you call home. And since you've included the idea of young parents, I'd say enjoy every age. Don't put enjoyment on hold. when they're little, let them be little.
Amen.
As they start to grow, let them grow. As they stretch and start getting out from under the nest or out from the nest, let them out. Let them be who they are. Enjoy every age. We have done that, and I'll tell you, I've learned a lot of that from Cynthia. I wasn't raised like that, I can guarantee you. And I learned that that the friendship of your child is something that you'll have forever, but you spend 20 years earning it. Each age, just live it up. I love the thing Jim Elliot said. They found it in his journal after he had been martyred. Wherever you are, be all there. Live to the hilt every situation you believe to be the will of God. Isn't that a good line? These have been great questions, and we thank you. There are others, and perhaps we can go over some tomorrow. Why don't we all right now just pause and pray together? Thanks so much, Lord, for the opportunity to talk about things that are very important to us. Thank you for being patient with us as we learn. Thank you for forgiving us. And thank you for the song we sang this morning, that none of that is going to be nailed to our account. It was all nailed to his account. And we don't bear it anymore. Praise the Lord. Thank you for our home and for our mates. Thank you for our families. For the place where life makes up its mind. Help us to be good moms and dads. Good husbands and wives. People truly committed to our lives, to our wives and our husbands and our children. As we are committed to your work for Jesus' sake. Amen. Thank you.